Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, Shad and I are chatting to Luke Ten Hav, a private investor in the resource space. Now, we've had Luke on the show a couple times before, and I know a lot of our listeners already follow along with you, either on Twitter or some other avenues as well. But Luke, if you could just give us a quick little update on what got you into the sector and how you gear your portfolio when investing in resource companies and a lot of the small ones as well, please.
Thanks, Corey. Yeah, I started in this business in 2011, 2012. And there are difficult periods and very nice periods. We just had a really good year. What I try to do is to find companies that they're not really popular. I think most people say that, but I think it's pretty difficult to really find companies and buy companies that are underfollowed, have not much going for it. But where you know there's the right asset or the right person or something that attracts your interest, and then to really buy it, make it a good position. And then keep it maybe for a year or two before it wakes up. That is how I made most of my money in this investing game. But of course, there are also investments where many other people are invested, like, for example, Adriatic. They made a big discovery, and then I own it already for 3 years or 4 years. But there are many different strategies, but I try to be mostly I try to buy the things that are not really in the focus yet, which are under the radar, and I really believe that something may change in the coming years to come. That's my kind of business plan as I invest.
Well, Luke, one of the things that's always impressed me about you, and I've been following you for a couple of years over at CEO.ca, is your ability to get in early to a company that was doing good work, and you were able to identify the management teams and the projects and the work programs that were going to lead to an appreciation in the share price, and you've got an uncanny ability to get in and see that before other investors do. You know, walk us through your process. Are you calling companies and talking to management? Are you going on site visits? Are you just digging through other people's research and looking for the few gems in the rough? How do you go about approaching when you're doing your watch list and when you're researching companies you think may be good to invest in?
Yeah, and it's never when you find something, it's never like you're 100% convinced. There's always doubt. In hindsight, it's always easy to say, hey, I bought this at 5 cents and right now it's 50 cents. So I did really well. But at 5 cents, it's always difficult. The way I find it is, I mean, when I started, I did the craziest things. I even, it's a bit of a newbie thing, but I just Googled Discovery, Gold, Grand Meter, Bonanza, and I was looking for words that I wanted to find press releases, and I had a couple of things that I became lucky. But of course, that's not the right way to do it. What I do nowadays is just follow almost every stock that is on the TSXV and know what team is running it, know their cash position, know what they have done in the last years, did they do rollbacks. So finding the right time to invest is depending on so many factors, and there's not just one way to find them. Sometimes I find something because I noticed that they already did two rollbacks and the team is stepping out, somebody else coming in, and you realize something's changing and you just call them up, and often they're not interested in you yet because they're not promoting yet. They're still trying to put things together. If you realize they are putting things together and you like the people that are doing that, sometimes it makes sense to already buy some in that early stage because they're trying to build a new company. But in other cases, there's just a forgotten asset that was interesting 10 or 15 years ago, but people forgot about it. It didn't really work. And then maybe 10 or 15 years later, with inflation and scarcity of assets, that asset became interesting again. So there are several reasons why a story could become interesting at a certain point. But you have to accept that the moment you find it is not necessarily the point in time when other people will like it, and it may still take a year or two before it really takes off, if it takes off.
Luke, let's talk about the overall sector then. And one thing that you've been pointing out on your Twitter account is the sell-off and drastic sell-off in a lot of these new listings. So a lot of the IPOs are just really rebranded companies that came into the market, let's say about a year ago. And give or take a few months on either end of that, these companies came out with, let's say, $50 million market cap. And almost across the board, they have all sold off very hard. Doesn't really even matter what their news has been. It seems like whatever their valuation was out of the gate has at least been cut in half. What do you take away from this environment where, again, all the new listings really have just gotten crushed?
Yeah, I think it's really just another year like this. We had a couple of good years, of course, 2020, 2016, 2011 or 10, I think. But in between, you have a couple of really difficult years. And I think this is such a year. There are a couple of really good companies in that list, such as Millennial Precious Metals. I mean, they have good shareholders, good team, good project. Looking for, I guess, also looking for new ways of, I mean, they have many projects, so maybe they will consider a spin out at some point. Or, I mean, they have many options, but also they went down from 70 cents to about 30, I guess. It's just the market, and even the good stories are cheap right now, but that doesn't mean they cannot get cheaper. So that I think the only thing that proves that every story is going down right now, independent of the quality, unless, of course, you have a big discovery or something that really sparks the interest right now, everything is just down. And yeah, you have to live with it. I just mentioned before we started talking about Nefson. I think Nefson is a good example. They went from 96 in 1996 from $17 to 10 cents in 2000, and then they went back to $9 in 2003. So you talk about a 75 bagger, and then they went down again to 40 cents. That's about 20% left, or 10%. And then again to $7.50. So they are good companies that are just going from $9 to 10 cents, and they come back again in good years. So it's really difficult for an investor to hold on or make the right decisions, the right timing, because you can find a good company, but there's no guarantee that you will make money in 1 or 2 years' time.
Yeah, Luke, it's definitely a cyclical business, and some investors that come from a traditional investing background struggle with that because they're just used to a stock market that gradually creeps higher over the decades, and they're not used to companies that can swing from $9 down to 10 cents, back up to $7, back down to 40 cents. It's a different kind of rhythm to get in. When you're looking to get positioned, another thing that caught my attention on your Twitter feed recently was you said, look at these 20 companies that have enough cash to not only drill this year, they're exploration companies for the most part, but they've got plenty of cash for next year. They've got big work programs going on. They're drilling, they're exploring, they're doing geophysics, and yet nobody cares. How do you get in the right rhythm to get positioned in some of those when you see that they've got cash in the bank, they're doing good work? I mean, you can't buy every stock that's out there. So how do you pick the winners in your portfolio out of a list like that?
Yeah, it's true. Brent Cook commented on that tweet. I mean, he was wondering, like, yeah, how many companies are not going to, he said, piss the money away. So, and that's true. I mean, it's no guarantee that it will work. But if you make a list of 20 companies that are well capitalized, and the next step maybe would be to look at their insider holdings and see if those people actually paid for those shares. That gives them a good incentive to make it work, and then maybe look at their background, did they do it before? I mean, these are tips and tricks that everybody probably uses. But yeah, for example, the first company on that list was Volcanic Gold Mines. They made a discovery, a real discovery. I have no idea if that will become a mine or if that will eventually work, but it's a pretty amazing discovery. And they are trading at a $15 million market cap. And they have $10 million in the bank. They have a good team. They have discovered before, sold businesses before. So I think, close to as good as it gets. But again, no guarantee it will work. And there's another company called North Peak. I own some shares in it. I'm not trying to promote it, but it's just a shell, I think. But that company is backed by the same people as Rupert Resources in the early days in Finland, and even Kirkland Lake in 2002. So if you trust that management team, and you probably have to call them and see what they are up to get comfortable with it, but it could be a good point to consider at least. I think such a list can help you find good names, but it's not a guarantee of success.
So when it comes to these companies that are cashed up, I know that all the stocks have sold off, even ones that are cashed up too. Do you put any weight in what their cash balance is compared to their underlying market cap? Because we have heard a number of arguments saying, oh, the market cap is under even the cash that the company has in the bank. We've seen environments like this before, and in my eyes, it doesn't mean that the stocks are even going to rebound back to where that cash value is. One thing you need to consider is these companies do just keep on spending. How do you balance that argument out then, Luke?
Yeah, for sure. It's I think it gives a certain aspect of safety. For example, Almodex as well, they sold the royalty and they now are at, I think, $20 million cash and a market cap of $14 million or $15 million. If you trust that team, and I think that's the big question, do you think that team will do everything in their power to make something work? They have many projects. And I think it's really important to talk to them, find out what they're up to. Are they planning to explore those properties? Are they so comfortable right now that they're going to put all that money into the ground themselves? If you like the prospect generator model where companies are optioning out these projects to avoid spending much, then maybe Almodex is not the right choice if they say we're going to spend all the money ourselves. But if Almodex is smart, I guess if they do the right things, it's in my opinion, they should make money for shareholders. I mean, even if they would distribute some money back to the shareholders, then yeah, you could give back the entry level of 10 to 15 cents and then continue to explore. But I guess they may just use the cash. So it's really important to know what are they planning to do with that money. And if that's really aggressive exploration, yeah, then they could be out of money within 2 or 3 years. So maybe it's even better to buy a company without so much cash if there's a better plan behind it. So again, it's no guarantee, but it feels better. It's a bit safer if a company is already cashed up, because you know they are not, if we go into a bear market, they don't have to raise cash within a year. And that could just save them from diluting, issuing warrants, and then completely getting stuck. So with the right team and a bit of cash in the bank, I think it makes things a bit safer.
Well, just one more question, Luke. It's an odd time to ask this question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. And that's more about somebody's exit strategy, because right now it's a market where everything's so beat down. Really, nobody's probably selling unless it's for tax loss reasons. They're looking to accumulate into this weakness. But when the sector turns, as you know, it can turn with a vengeance, and then suddenly all the turkeys can fly and all the stocks start going up. So when you've got a portfolio of 20, 30 companies and we finally get that turn, and you know, you're positioned in the ones that you like, what's your exit strategy, and how do you know when it's the right time to take the win and move on to another company? Or how do you know when it's the right time to cut a company that's just lagging all the others and get into another company? How do you address that portfolio rebalancing as the sector turns?
Yeah, I guess that's my worst skill. I mean, I'm not really good at this point, even though it's very important. I sold things that went up a multiple of times, and I held on to things that went down again. So I think it's really difficult. I think it's important to probably on a weekly or monthly basis reconsider what are the valuations? Am I still comfortable with it? If you are an investor, again, you trust the team, then sometimes you should just hold on. I mean, the best gains are made if you really make a 50-bagger or 100-bagger. But that's very, really difficult, especially in that example where you bought for 10 cents and it's trading at a dollar. Well, if you're not at least considering to sell some in this risky mining business, think you're doing something wrong. But a lot of people who feel comfortable and they sit there for until a 50-bagger, it's really difficult. I doubt that I can do it. So that it's really difficult to decide on this. I cannot really give any tricks or, because it's really depending on the company. If I feel uncomfortable, if a company reaches $1 billion, and I think the NPV is at 50% or whatsoever, and I don't see really a lot of upside in exploration, then I'll probably sell. But if that's the best asset around and somebody is willing to pay $1.5 billion for that asset, then you have to accept that you're not gonna get the maximum out of it, which is also fine, I guess. So yeah, it really depends on the investor. It's for me difficult to give a good answer to that question.
Yeah, fair enough. But you know what? Waiting for those 10 baggers, 50 baggers, those do have a lot of luck in them as well, right? So I think there is also the strategy of locking in some gains when you do see them and not necessarily holding on too long, because Luke, I'm sure we all on this call have rode something up and saw it come right back down. So that is a painful, painful ride, unfortunately. In summary then, Luke, how aggressive are you getting with your portfolio in terms of buying or selling at this current time?
Yeah, sometimes selling is really difficult because there's not much liquidity. I prefer to keep only 20 or 30 positions, so they are reasonably sizable, and selling is in some companies close to impossible if you don't want to move the market. And if you start leaking those shares out, people will notice and other people will just put a lower sell order in. So luckily, most companies I own, I'm quite comfortable with. There's no guarantee, again, that it will make money. But I'm quite comfortable with those companies. And if we get into a really difficult period, I probably have to hold onto them until we get into better periods again. I think a good example is probably also all these companies are so difficult. Even the most certain companies in the development space are still very uncertain. If you go back 6 years ago and you ask people what are the most likely companies that own a mine or a development project that will become a mine, I think people would have said Delradian, Bellow Sun, Kamenak, Pretium, Orezone, Sabina, Condor. And only one of these seven or six that I mentioned became a mine. That's Pretium. The other ones are still not a mine 6 years later. And if you ask that question to me today, I mean, I would say Marathon, Rupert, Great Bear, Corvus, Osisko Mining. And who knows, in 5 or 6 years' time, only one of them became a mine. So even the ones that you are pretty certain of still disappoint. So you have to just assume the worst and really know what you're doing. And in this period, like last year, a lot of new investors came in because things were looking good. And they probably go through their first difficult year right now. And then there's a lot to be learned. And that's the way I learned it in 2013, 14, and 15. And I will probably make the mistake again to be fully invested or close to fully invested when we head into that downturn.
Yeah, in this market, nothing is a guarantee, right? And there are always a lot of lessons to be learned. And one thing I think is important is never fall in love with any story, especially when things start to change. But easier said than done, I know, for a lot of investors. Luke, great having you back on the show. Thanks for taking some time and sharing some of your thoughts on, well, where the sector stands. I will post a link below this interview to your Twitter feed so everyone can follow along with you there. And we'll have you back on the show in the near term here, Luke. So appreciate your time. Have a great rest of your week.
Thank you. Same to you.